Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving deep into the world of Audemars Piguet watches today. A name truly synonymous with, well, luxury and precision. You might think you know the story, but honestly, we've got some fascinating insights from your sources. They really reveal the heart and soul and even some close calls of this iconic watchmaker.
Yeah, definitely some close calls.
So our mission in this deep dive is to explore 5 surprising facts that go beyond the surface, giving you a shortcut, really, to understanding what makes Audemars Piguet tick, both literally and, you know, figuratively.
And what's truly marvelous here is how these sources, they let us peel back the layers. You know, a brand often just seen as high-end, we get to discover its unique journey, its foundational principles.
Right.
It's a chance to truly grasp the why behind the what of their enduring appeal, instead of just, well, admiring the shiny finished product.
Absolutely. And it's this foundational independence we're about to explore that I think really sets the stage for everything else. Leading us to our first surprising fact. Audemars Piguet isn't just an old company. It's a family-owned business. And it always has been. The research confirms that Jules Louis Audemars and Edouard Auguste Piguet, they kicked off their workshop way back in 1875.
Right, in Le Brassus, Switzerland, deep in the Vallée de Joux.
Exactly. And here we are, nearly 150 years later, and that commitment to being family-owned, it's endured. It's truly remarkable.
If you zoom out a bit, the significance of this independence is, well, it's genuinely remarkable in the luxury sector, especially over such a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. So many luxury brands, even ones with incredible heritage, they've been bought up by huge conglomerates.
True.
But Audemars Piguet, they've consistently maintained their autonomy. And that lets them uphold their exacting standards, their deeply ingrained values year after year, kind of irrespective of market trends or external pressures.
So they don't have shareholder demands in the same way.
Exactly. They don't have to answer to shareholders like a publicly traded company would. Which then kind of begs the question, right? What kind of freedom does that actually give a brand? Especially for innovation and quality control when they can make decisions based on a long-term vision, not just short-term profits.
Right.
Like they might greenlight a project that takes a decade to perfect, knowing it aligns with their legacy. That's something a, you know, quarter-driven public company might just never consider.
That's a huge point about independence and that that long-term view. So if we look at that kind of generational thinking, what's a specific example from your sources? How did that family control directly influence a key choice? Maybe one that went against the grain at the time.
Well, it's not always about one single huge decision, you know. It's more like a consistent philosophy. Take their commitment to limited production, for instance.
Okay.
In a booming market, a publicly owned company, they'd likely push to maximize output, sell more units.
Sure, makes sense.
But AP, being family controlled, they can prioritize exclusivity. They can focus on that meticulous craftsmanship over just sheer volume. This ensures the perceived and the actual value of each piece stays exceptionally high. They're not diluting the brand chasing every single sale.
I see.
And that's a direct result of not having a board focused purely on like growth metrics.
That ability to chart their own course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that clearly fostered a spirit of bold creativity. And it's this very spirit, I think, that led them to redefine what a watch could be. Which brings us to our next surprising fact. Their pioneering work in transparency with the first skeletonized pocket watch.
Yes, skeleton watches.
Yeah, you've probably seen them, those incredible pieces where you could literally see all the intricate gears and springs working inside.
Mesmerizing.
But what the sources reveal is Audemars Piguet's truly groundbreaking role here. Okay, so the idea of exposing watch movements started way back with André Charles Caron in 1706, but Audemars Piguet, they took that concept and ran with it to a whole new level.
Yeah.
In 1934, get this, they released the first fully skeletonized pocket watch.
Fully skeletonized, yeah.
This wasn't just leaving a dial off. It was this intricate design. It embraced transparency as an aesthetic, really, a testament to the mechanical art. Every component was intentionally designed to be seen.
And if we dig into this a bit, you see how AP really innovated within an existing idea. They pushed the boundaries of watch design at the time.
Oh, so exactly.
Well, developing a fully skeletonized pocket watch, meticulously detailing every single component so it's visible, that showcased an incredible level of craftsmanship. technical mastery, really.
Wow.
And even though wristwatches were getting more popular than pocket watches back then, this transparent design, it made a significant splash. It showed off the artistry inside.
Right.
It really underlined their dedication to horlogeries, you know, that high-end, artistic, traditional watchmaking.
And people still love that today, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. It's an enduring appeal. Skeletonized watches are still incredibly popular. High-end brands like Vacheron Constantin and, of course, AP themselves, they still make stunning ones. It just speaks to, I think, a universal appreciation for complex, beautiful mechanics.
It's fascinating how they took an idea and just elevated it, made it into a true art form. It's one thing to make a movement. It's another to make it so beautiful you want everyone to see it.
Precisely. It shows a real confidence in their own engineering and artistry. They weren't just showing off. They were celebrating the inner life of the watch.
Speaking of enduring appeal and celebrating engineering.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about a true game changer. The Royal Oak.
Ah, yes. The icon.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Your sources tell us this watch, first released in 1972, it's actually celebrating its 50th anniversary.
That's right.
And it's hailed as the first steel luxury sports watch. Some even say the first luxury sports watch ever.
A big claim, but arguably true.
But here are some really surprising details. Get this. The original prototype, which was actually called the Safari.
Safari. Interesting name.
Yeah. It was made from white gold, not steel.
No kidding.
White gold.
Yep. And even the steel models they eventually sold to the public had white gold screws.
Wow. That's subtle.
Totally. A subtle, almost hidden touch of luxury. And here's another detail that's just wow. It highlights the pressure, the ingenuity. The Royal Oak prototype, inspired by old-school divers' helmets.
Mm-hmm. The octagonal bezel.
Right. It was apparently designed in just one day.
One day.
One day, right before its presentation. It's incredible. I mean, I struggle to pick out my socks in a day, let alone design an iconic watch like that.
Huh. Yeah, that's intense pressure. Speaks volumes.
It really does. And it's evolved, too, of course.
Yeah.
The Royal Oak Offshore came in 93. They've made continuous revisions. But that original Gerald Genta design is still unmistakably there.
And stepping back to look at the bigger picture, the Royal Oak was just radical, a complete departure for luxury.
How so?
Well, before it came along, luxury watches were pretty much always precious metals. Gold, platinum. To introduce a high-end watch in steel and then market it as a luxury sports watch, that was revolutionary. It completely disrupted the industry's whole idea of what luxury could even be.
And the screws.
Oh, the white gold screws. That was genius. A subtle touch of inherent quality that, honestly, only a keen observer or the owner would likely ever notice.
Mm.
It blurred the lines between sort of utilitarian and opulent in a really unique way. It speaks to the integrity of the craft beyond just the surface flash,
yeah.
Which, again, makes you ask, how does a design conceived in a single day, under what must have been immense pressure, how does that become such a timeless classic, one that defines a brand for decades?
Pure genius, maybe. Fueled by desperation.
It seems like a combination, yeah. Raw, immediate genius, definitely fueled by an urgent need.
That's such a powerful disruption,
yeah.
Essentially rewriting the rules.
Yeah.
But for a brand so steeped in tradition and precious metals, did your sources mention any internal resistance or, like, challenges convincing their own customers or even the artisans that steel could be luxury? Jeff, feels like a massive leap.
Oh, absolutely. It was a huge gamble. The sources definitely highlight that the initial reception was mixed, even skeptical.
Really?
Yeah. Luxury watch buyers back then, they were used to gold and platinum. They associated steel with practicality, tools maybe, not prestige.
Right.
So the challenge wasn't just the design itself. It was shifting an entire mindset.
Mm.
It took visionary leadership within the family and a really bold marketing approach to basically educate the market, to convince them that luxury could be found in innovative design, in meticulous finish, regardless of the metal.
And the screws helped there.
The white gold screws, like you said, were that subtle nod, a reminder of the underlying quality, even in steel.
It makes you wonder how a brand with such a history making these iconic pieces, you assume they always navigated challenges easily.
Mm.
Well, here's a truly jaw-dropping revelation. After nearly a century in business without a major market hit, Audemars Piguet was actually struggling financially.
Wow. Really struggling.
Seriously struggling. And it was the Royal Oak that ultimately saved the company. Yes. The research shows the company hadn't had like a runaway success for decades. And even the Royal Oak wasn't an instant hit. It took over a year to sell the first 1,000 models.
A whole year for the first 1,000. That must have been nerve-wracking.
Totally. But in the end, that astronomical price tag, apparently more than 10 times the cost of a Rolex Submariner at the time.
10 times a sub. Wow.
That high price, combined with his unique appeal, was enough. It got Audemars Piguet out of its financial rut and put them firmly on the map of top-tier luxury watchmakers. It was a huge gamble that, thankfully for them, paid off massively.
The key insight there from the sources is just the sheer risk involved. I mean, the Royal Oak wasn't just a new watch design. It was a desperate, high-stakes gamble for a company basically on the brink. Its initial slow sales could easily have sealed their fate. But their perseverance, and maybe just the sheer audacity of the design and that pricing strategy, that ultimately solidified their place. It really shows how innovation, even if it's initially misunderstood or met with skepticism, how it can redefine a brand's destiny, even an entire industry segment. It wasn't just a product launch. It was like a Hail Mary pass that turned into this legendary play.
All because of that long-term independent vision we talked about earlier.
Exactly. It connects back perfectly.
It really hammers home how crucial that independence was to make such a bold move, to stick with it through slow sales, price it so audaciously. That speaks volumes about the courage baked into their company culture. Clearly, it wasn't just about selling watches. It was about betting on their unique vision of what luxury could be.
Indeed. It was like an investment in an identity that hadn't fully formed yet in the market's eyes, but that they deeply believed in.
That's incredible. And finally, a fact that really underpins their entire philosophy. It
Oh!
connects back to everything we've discussed. Jules, Louis Audemars, and Edouard Auguste Piguet, the founders, they believed passionately in the quality of a handmade luxury watch. And that tradition, it continues to this day.
Still handmade.
Still handmade, even as the brand grew. Achieved global recognition, they made a conscious choice. They chose handmaking over mass production. It's not just some quaint historical detail, it's a living philosophy. It defines every single piece they create.
And this commitment to handcrafted artistry is undeniably a defining mark of Audemars Piguet watches. Think about it in an age of increasing automation everywhere, across almost every industry.
Right.
This level of dedication to quality, to detail, it's truly rare, especially among luxury watchmakers of their
So
scale.
it's not just assembly.
Oh no, it's not just about what you see on the surface. It's about the invisible labor, right?
Oh.
The countless hours of expertise, the human touch invested in every single component, every intricate movement, every finished watch. This makes each timepiece not just an object, but really a testament to human skill and patience. It's a statement about valuing the process just as much as the final product, and ensuring a level of precision and, frankly, soul that machines just can't replicate.
The idea that every single watch still carries that human touch, that's genuinely impressive. It's easy to talk about luxury, but to actually live that commitment day in, day out in a global brand, that's something else entirely. It really elevates the value beyond just the materials used.
It absolutely does. It creates a narrative, doesn't it? A story of dedication within each piece. And that narrative is something discerning collectors, they deeply value that.
So from its unyielding family legacy and that bold long-term vision that literally saved it, to the pioneering transparency of its skeletonized watches, the disruptive genius of the Royal Oak, and the meticulous hand craftsmanship in every single piece. We've taken a real deep dive today. We've seen what makes Audemars Piguet so much more than just another luxury name. You've now got the inside track, really, on the surprising stories and details that define this incredible brand.
And this maybe raises an important question for you, the listener, to ponder. In a world that's constantly pushing for faster, cheaper, more automated production, what true value do we find in brands that stubbornly hold on to tradition, but also innovation, and crucially, the human touch in their craft?
Interesting point.
Maybe consider how these principles resonate beyond just watchmaking, into any field, really, that's striving for enduring quality and a unique identity.